is the Big Stories Podcast, where we tell the amazing and inspiring stories from across the Big 12 Conference.
Welcome back to Big Stories. I'm your host, Cleon Wall. It's great to have you here. We're going to get to the elephant in the room, the Big 12 title game. Also, the biggest storylines, including what's going on in Big 12 basketball. But first, we usually start with the top five teams of the week with producer Chase Davidson. But I think it's pretty obvious who the top five teams are. Number five, TCU. Number four, Houston. Number three, Arizona. Number two, BYU. And number one, Texas Tech. Now, we could quibble with number five, but the Horned Frogs looked impressive in their win over Cincinnati at home. You could even argue how could I put Arizona over Houston, especially since Houston beat Arizona earlier in the season. But the Wildcats won their last five games of the season and also triumphed over a rival on the road to secure the number three slot and the ninth win of the season. Okay, enough about this. Let's discuss the elephant in the room, especially since I work at BYU Broadcasting, and that's the hiring of Eric Morris as Oklahoma State's football coach. Just kidding. I hope it all works out okay for Coach Morris and the Cowboys. It's the news about BYU head coach Kalani Sitake being offered the job at Penn State. Now, as I'm recording this, no decision has been made, so everything I say will be dated. But what I do plan to say here could relate to what's happening right now at BYU or next year at BYU or anytime in the future with BYU and Coach Kalani Sitake. Number one, Kalani's a good guy who's done a lot of great things for the BYU football program. His first year was great. Second year was horrible. Things really kind of turned around in the pandemic season of 2020. Last two seasons have been fantastic. Now, Kalani, this is my second point, I should say. Number two, he has every right to stay or to leave. I'm not going to scream about loyalty or if he's a traitor, if he decides to leave. He's earned a lot of respect here in Provo and around the Big 12. Let's put it into my perspective and many of you, your perspectives too. I love working at BYU right now and I want to stay here forever. But I would also question my loyalty if I was offered more money or incentives to leave and go somewhere else. I would have to think about it. I would think Kalani is thinking the same thing. One more thing I want to say about Kalani when it comes to his players have a lot of respect to him. This is my third point. I work with Chase Roberts, a current BYU football player, and Connor Pay, a former BYU football player, on a podcast here for BYU Broadcasting. And, you know, they praise Kalani all the time. They love Kalani. They think he's a great guy. They think he's a great coach. And so no matter what happens to him, he will always have the respect of his players, no matter what. My fourth point, people may bring up the fact that when he was hired, he said he wanted to be the Polynesian Lavelle Edwards. Now, Lavelle Edwards spent close to 30 years as the head coach of BYU. Kalani has been here 10. But this is a different time in coaching compared to when Lavelle was here the first time. Lavelle wanted to stay in Provo. That's just who he was. He had been at BYU since 1962 as an assistant and then retired after the 2000 season. Now he's got a stadium named after him. His only other coaching job was at Granite High School in Salt Lake. He loved BYU. BYU loved him back. They were never, ever going to fire him, no matter what happened, because of his loyalty to BYU. And I think he just liked being around BYU. I think he liked his life here and what he had built here. And he's just like, I'm just going to stick it out here. Kalani is different. He's coached at several other colleges. BYU fans need to realize that he could go at any time. I know BYU is a good job and that they are in a power conference, but if he feels like it's the right time to go, I'm sure he'll have his reasons to go, just like Lavelle had his reasons of wanting to stick around Provo. Finally, my fifth point, everything is going to turn out okay in the end, whether Kalani leaves or stays, and whether that's this year or next year or sometime in the future, it's going to be okay for BYU and whatever team Kalani goes to. There could be struggles along the way, but both BYU and Penn State will eventually move forward and have good teams in the future. This is all part of life's journey. None of us wants heartache or challenges for our own lives or for our favorite teams, but that's what makes us stronger and better in the end, is having challenges. So let's not fret. Let's move forward, knowing that everyone will be better off in the end. Okay, that's enough. On to the next segment.
The Big Stories, five biggest storylines.
Number five.
Happy holidays for Big 12 basketball. The Big 12 acquitted itself nicely over the Thanksgiving break, or I should say the teams in the Big 12. BYU won an ESPN tournament in Florida by beating Miami and Dayton. They hold steady at number 9 in the AP poll. Arizona State lost the championship game of the Maui Invitational 88-75, but won their previous two games over Texas and Washington State. They now take on Oklahoma this Saturday. Colorado remained undefeated after beating Washington in the Acrisure Holiday Classic 81-68. They got a vote in the top 25 this week. Oklahoma State also got some votes after beating Northwestern in the Thanksgiving Classic in Chicago. Pokes were also undefeated through the holidays. TCU is also getting some love from the AP voters after taking down number 10, Florida, on Thanksgiving Day in San Diego, and then following that up with a victory over Wisconsin. How about them Horned Frogs? I know the season's young, but those are two nice wins for TCU. Then there were the teams that went to the Players Era Tournament in Las Vegas. If you want to find out more about the Players Era Tournament, go back to the last episode. I explain a little bit more about it there. By the way, Baylor went 2-1 in this tournament, losing to a ranked St. John's team in the second game, but beating San Diego State in the final game. Iowa State won all three of their games in the tournament, beating St. John's, Creighton, and Syracuse. They move up 5 spots to number 10 in the AP poll. Kansas took 3rd place in the tourney after beating Notre Dame, Syracuse, and 17th-ranked Tennessee on the final day, 81-76. Jayhawks are now at number 21 in the top 25 poll. Now, that Tennessee team that Kansas took down in that last game, they did deal Houston their first loss of the season, 76-73. The Cougars fall from number 3 to number 8 in the AP poll, but you should expect them to be in contention for the Big 12 title and a Final Four berth at the end of the season. Parker Ainsworth of the Locked On Cougs podcast talks about this year's team.
The Houston Cougars are relying on Kingston Fleming's, the freshman superstar point guard, to be that developing player that's going to help them take it over the top this season. It's weird to say that a 5-star freshman is a, quote, developing guy that looking to contribute. But for a program that does not typically rely on freshmen, and for a point guard in a system that's really difficult for point guards, and I should mention that Kingston, of the 3 freshmen playing for Houston right now, was the lowest ranked of the 3. He's becoming an immediate X factor for Houston. If he can produce at a high level, this team is absolutely a contender to be back in the national championship game very, very soon.
The highest ranked Big 12 team, by the way, number 2 Arizona, also went undefeated over the holidays.
Number 4.
How about them Red Raiders in basketball? Texas Tech is the lone top 25 team we didn't talk about in the previous segment. The 19th ranked Red Raiders are 6-2 on the season after victories over New Orleans and Wyoming. Their 2 losses are to number 1 Purdue and 14th ranked Illinois. Producer Chase Davidson caught up with Locked On Texas Tech podcaster Chris Level to ask him about the Red Raiders.
Chris, what is this team's identity right now? You know, defense first, pace and space. What's this team's identity going into the season, going into conference play?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to figure it out, I think. I think you're in the midst of that. As we're sitting here talking, you've got a game against LSU on Sunday in Fort Worth, which is the day after the Big 12 title game. You're set to play Arkansas in Dallas. And then you're going to go to New York and play Duke. So their next 3 weeks are going to be quite interesting, as the tests are about to start coming fast and furious. I do the radio for Tech basketball in Champaign, Illinois, a couple of weeks ago, and you're playing a top 15 ranked team, and there's 15,000 people there. And I was very impressed with how they played, considering it's not a group that has been together very much at all. And they took Illinois to the very end before, you know, just getting edged out. The Bahamas trip the week before Thanksgiving, though, was not good. You probably shouldn't have beaten Wake Forest, but you did. And I think, to their credit, they hung on. But the Purdue game, this was an example of a team with a lot of new pieces that is trying to answer a lot of the questions that you just asked, versus a team that had every answer you could imagine. We've got 4 senior starters. We've got 8 or 9 guys returning from last year's team. We're very talented. We also got bounced in the first round of the NCAA tournament last year, and we're not real thrilled about it. And Purdue football is not any good this year, so all the fans they all went to the Bahamas. Well, Texas Tech's in the middle of this big football run, and you had like a couple hundred fans at the most, and I think it was like 2,500 Purdue fans in this little ballroom, and it was a mess. And your team did not handle it well at all. But you need to get better defensively. Offense is not your problem. Shooting is not your problem. But defensively has been a big problem. And until you decide to guard and guard like Grant McCaslin wants them to guard, which has kind of been his identity, then you're going to kind of struggle a bit. And, you know, you don't really have a lot of time right now because the easy tests are about over with. You've got two guarantee games left. The rest of them are the three games that I talked about, and then conference play starts. So, it's about to get interesting in Lubbock for sure.
Yeah, definitely looking for that marquee win as far as the non-conference goes, but there's plenty of chances. Which matchup would you say of those? You know, play Duke, Arkansas. I believe you also play, who else is it? LSU. Oh, yeah, LSU this Sunday. And what would you say is the most, telling of those games? Which one are you anticipating the most?
You know, maybe like the Duke game will be a tough one because it'll be a very pro Duke crowd. The LSU one will be a very pro Texas Tech crowd. The Arkansas game may be the one that's most telling. That's an 11 a.m. game at the American Airlines Center where the Mavericks play. These two teams played. Texas Tech beat Arkansas in the Sweet 16 last year, so there's some recent history there. Arkansas is very talented. I think they're somewhat inconsistent right now, kind of like Texas Tech is. And so that is the game that I would look at and say, I think you'll learn quite a bit after that matchup. But, and you have two really good players that came off of last year's Elite Eight team, and Christian Anderson and JT Taubman. JT Taubman is one of the best players in the country. It's just acclimating these new pieces, these talented pieces, mind you, and connecting them and getting them connected and getting them to understand, you know, you came from Santa Clara, you came from UNC Greensboro, you came from Washington State, you came from Virginia Commonwealth and Luke Bamboya, their starting center, all these places. This league is about to test you like you've never been tested before, night in and night out. The coaching is elite. The talent is elite. And you can get away with some little things when you're playing, you know, Wyoming, and you're playing, you know, New Orleans, and, you know, Sam Houston in the non-conference. You can't get away with some of this stuff when the conference starts. And that's why I think Grant tried to throw them into the deep end of the pool with the non-conference schedule that they put together. Because this is as tough of a non-conference schedule as Texas Tech has ever had. Because you're going to end up playing potentially, you know, an LSU by the time you play them this weekend, they could be 8-0, but you could end up playing, you know, five or six ranked teams in the non-conference before conference play gets here, and we already know what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an absolute gauntlet, and I do think that a lot of these Big 12 teams are doing well scheduling these tough matchups, preparing themselves for essentially these tournaments where you're playing several ranked teams in a row is kind of like Big 12 play. We all love the Big 12 as a gauntlet, but with TCU even beating Florida, I mean, this conference is so deep, you can't get away with anything. I mean, there's very few games where it's like, all right, we got this. There is, you know, few and far between. You're going to play, you know, 18 to 20 conference games, and there's going to be one or two of those you're going to have an easy game, maybe.
Yeah, and Chase, I would tell you, too, this was a mandate passed down by the head of basketball, Brian Thornton, the head of basketball for the Big 12, at their spring meetings back in, I think, May. And everybody was, like, looking at what the SEC got in bid-wise last year. Was it, like, 14 or something? Mm-hmm. And the Big 12 didn't have near that many. And how do we fix that? Well, he told them, you know your own team, but don't. Let's not complain about things when we didn't, because last year you didn't do very well in the non-conference. Even there were some legit games, but you just, you know, the SEC kind of rolled through and it carried through in the bids and into the tournament. So I think that everybody kind of listened and was proactive there. And again, I think he asked the question aloud. Do you want to schedule to be a one seed? Do you want to schedule just to get into the tournament? What are you trying to do? But you need to make those decisions, and you've got time to do that. And it's different than football. When we talked about football recently, and you can suffer great consequences by an early season loss in football, but basketball, not so much. So, but I love it, and I hate it that it all happens at the same time, because so many of these great matchups in the non-conference for basketball, they get covered up by football because we're still in football mode and all that stuff, because you're getting unbelievable games and whatnot. But we'll see, and I know BYU is rolling too. I mean, they've got a lot of excitement as far as basketball goes as well. So again, and these two teams, I think Texas Tech and BYU play each other twice. There's a home and home there, so that ought to be fun. So it buckle up, because I always say it every year, man, it's the best year in the Big 12, and I'm going to say it again. This year might be the best one, so we'll see.
Number three, let's go bowling. 10 of the conference's 16 teams are going bowling this holiday season. Kansas State squeezed out a sixth victory to be the last team eligible. Houston won their ninth game of the season and prevented Baylor from bowling this past weekend. I don't think the Cougs cared whether or not the Bears went bowling this season. The Big 12 has 8 potential bowl tie-ins for the college football season. So how do you fit 10 teams into 8 bowls? Well, the 3 former Pac-12 teams who are eligible for bowls can also go to bowls associated with the old Pac-12 conference. Like right now, ESPN has Utah playing in the Las Vegas Bowl and Arizona playing in the Holiday Bowl. But you know what would be a juicy matchup? That is, if BYU doesn't make it into the college football playoff. How about having BYU and Utah play each other in the Alamo Bowl? Okay, I think I'm one of the few people in the world that would want to see that game played again this season. Of course, we won't know the bowl matchups until the Big 12 championship game has concluded between BYU and Texas Tech. That'd be the other way that you have enough bowls for teams trying to get in, is if both BYU and Texas Tech get into the college football playoff. Of course, if that's going to happen, it's starting to sound a lot more like BYU's going to have to win.
Number two,
BYU's last hope. Columnists, fans, even the head coaches for Vanderbilt and Texas, they've been pleading the cases for teams to get into the college football playoff. Of course, Vanderbilt and Texas pleading for their own cause to get into the college football playoff. And included in that cacophony of people wanting teams to get into the college football playoff is Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark. He says BYU should be in the big football dance. Yeah, that doesn't sound right, but you know what I mean. Anyway, it looks more and more like BYU will be on the outside looking in if they lose to Texas Tech in the Big 12 title tilt. No matter what Brett Yormark says, it's not looking good for BYU right now. This is just a reminder that we had no idea BYU would be this good this season. So I sat down with BYU Sports Nation's Jason Shepherd to talk about what it will take for the Cougars to win this game and how many wins each of us thought this team would have prior to the season starting. Jason, I don't think anyone outside of the BYU football team thought that this team would go 11-1 this season. Maybe you did, and if you did, great. But they did, and they did it with a freshman quarterback. Me, when I come to predicting how many wins a team's going to have during the season, I always skew conservative.
Yeah.
And so I thought BYU was going to win about 7 games this year. I could talk myself into 8, but I thought 7 seems about right. And yet they win 11 games. Looking back to what you thought prior to the season, what did you predict, and how did BYU blow those predictions out of the water?
Yeah, it's interesting, because after the quarterback situation, you know, prior to when Retzlaff was still the guy at the quarterback position, 11 wins absolutely was realistic for everybody, and that's kind of what we thought. But when things changed and you realized that BYU was going to start a new quarterback, even before we knew it was Bear Bachmeyer, look, and maybe I just am eternally blue-goggled. Maybe it is, and I'm fully aware of that, and it could be that. I still thought 8 wins was possible with this team, because I always said from day one, BYU did not win all the games last year because of the quarterback. They won because they had a really good team, and the bulk of that really good team was back. Yes, the quarterback's the most important person, but I still thought whoever won the quarterback position had a really, really good offense around him. So I still thought they could win 8 possibly 9, but I had kind of settled around 8. So to be able to come in with a true freshman quarterback and start the way they did, to only have the one loss against a team now that's a top 5 team in the college football playoff, that speaks volumes to these players and these coaches for what they were able to do in a situation that nobody outside of Provo thought was possible.
Any team can beat anyone on any given day. I mean, we could just sit there and say, I know this is an old reference, but I think 1980 Olympic hockey.
Where's Al Michaels?
Yeah, exactly. Do you believe in miracles? I mean, anyone can beat anyone on any given day, but I don't think any or a lot of people are giving BYU a shot at beating Texas Tech in the Big 12 championship. Everyone has watched how the Red Raiders have manhandled the rest of the conference in the past few weeks, and they think it's a foregone conclusion. Barring any injuries, why do you think BYU can beat the Red Raiders on Saturday?
Hey, look, let's make no mistake about it. Texas Tech is very, very good. I mean, there's a reason why they're ranked where they are, and BYU saw that firsthand in the game in Lubbock. To answer your question why it could be different this time, number one, it is hard to beat a team twice in the same season. Number two, BYU was embarrassed by their performance, and there is a motivating factor in that that we want to prove that we are better than what we showed in the first matchup. So I think that plays a role into it. I also think, look, the BYU defense actually played pretty well in that game, holding Texas Tech, I believe, to just 2 touchdowns. So the defense played well. The offense and turnovers were the problem. So I think if BYU can limit the turnovers, you'd love to see a 0, but at least win the turnover battle, I think that plays a huge role into this, because we know how good this offense is. This offense can put up points. The other thing to look back on, if you remember back to the game in Lubbock, L.J. Martin had 1 week, had the bye week before. He had gotten hurt the week before. You had the bye week, and then he was coming back. He was healthy enough to play, but certainly was not 100%, nor is anybody at this point of the season. But they held him, speaking of the Texas Tech defense, to just 36 yards rushing. If BYU can limit the turnovers, have the defense play the way they did, and have L.J. Martin be able to be L.J. Martin and get him running the ball on the ground, I think BYU puts themselves in a position to win this game.
You mentioned L.J. Martin. He could be one of the huge keys in this game. I look at this game and I think, and maybe it's recency bias because of what we saw against UCF, but I look at this game and I think wide receiver Parker Kingston and quarterback Evan Johnson are going to be two, or one guy in offense and one guy in defense who I think could make a huge difference in this game. Who would be your choice of the key guys, at least one guy on offense and one guy on defense that you think, yeah, these are the guys that are going to be huge if BYU pulls out a win against Texas Tech?
I think on offense, it's L.J. It's got to be L.J. Martin. We've seen what this offense looks like when L.J. Martin is picking up 7 yards per carry. Even if you're getting 5 on first down, it just changes everything that's available to this offense on second and third down. So I think L.J., and I will say a 1A on offense, is how healthy is Chase Roberts and how effective can he be? Because him just being on the field helps a guy like Parker Kingston and JoJo Phillips and Carson Ryan, all these guys. So he's kind of like a 1A. On the defense, it's such a collective, but I'll go with Jack Kelly and his ability to sort of spy Baron Morton. We know how good Jack is. He is so good. I'm so glad he came back this year, because he has done everything and more since coming over from Weber State a couple of seasons ago. He has been so good. So I will probably go LJ and Jack Kelly. I know those are some obvious ones, but they're obvious for a reason.
Jason, thanks a lot for joining us here on the Big Stories Podcast.
You bet.
Number one.
What a team. Texas Tech is the only Big 12 team almost guaranteed to get into the college football playoff, and it makes sense. In conference alone, they have been outscoring opponents by an average of 38-11. That includes a couple of shutouts to the 2 worst teams in the league. Their lone loss of the season was without starting quarterback Baron Morton, and they still almost won that game. BYU did score 7 points against them a few weeks ago, but the game was pretty much in hand when it happened. I'm not saying that the Red Raiders are invincible, but they proved to be the top dog in the conference. Here again is producer Chase and Locked On Texas Tech host Chris Lovell.
Chris, what does Texas Tech need to do specifically to beat BYU twice I know it is hard to beat a team twice in a season. Many say that. But in your opinion, what is the X factor in beating this team twice?
Chase, I think stop the run. You know, I think it sounds pretty simple, very difficult to do, but that's BYU is as good as anybody in the country at running the football, and I think you've got to be able to limit that. And then based on the last matchup between these two, boy, you better be able to execute better in the red zone. I mean, having to kick 5 field goals, and you know, BYU is, I think, 8th in the country in red zone defense, but you've been really good in the red zone ever since. But that day, it kind of left a weird taste in your mouth, feeling like, man, how much did you just leave on the table? And then you had 5 field goals, but then you also just came away with nothing right at the end of the first half of that game with a couple of drops to Terrence Carter and Nicole Aiken. So, yeah, executing better in the red zone and then stopping the run. I think that is a pretty good little formula, in my opinion, getting another win.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. That game was very interesting as Texas Tech was definitely dominating, and both teams could argue that they had a lot left on the field. And Texas Tech offense did struggle in the red zone, which was an interesting part of the game that pretty much anyone who watched the game could see that. But I think that brings us to Baron Morton. How has Baron Morton been able to bounce back so many times this season? He's basically been injured for the better part of the season. Even in the BYU game, you could tell he was, you know, not totally healthy. You know, what has he done to bounce back, and how do you think his health is currently right now?
Yeah, Chase, I think, you know, because this game was a month ago, it's going to be about a month ago between the two times that they play. What are the differences in these two teams? And I think Baron Morton is a big difference for Texas Tech since the last time that these two teams played, just simply because he feels better. He only played a half against West Virginia this past weekend, played one drive in the third quarter. They were up 35-0. And then there's a bye week the week before that. And I just think just the rest. He's been playing with a broken leg. He's had a hairline fracture in one of those bones in his lower leg. And I think that just what helps that? Well, no activity does. So I think that and he played. He threw for over 300 and like I said, a half and one drive. Went through, you know, 3 touchdown passes, and I think played arguably his best game. It's fascinating to me because LJ Martin was also compromised or didn't feel very good either. I mean, he's carried the ball 75 times in the last 3 games and has 12 catches. And so I think those two players for each team are very different than they were the first time that you played them. But Baron took BYU's interesting because they'll blitz a lot on first and second down, which is different than a lot of teams when they really lean on third downs to blitz. And Baron got caught a couple times. He took some bad sacks and not as mobile as he would prefer to be and didn't throw the ball away when he needed to and things like that. So, but I think, yeah, Baron's been a warrior. I think he's worked very hard to play on a stage like this. And I would look forward to seeing him compete on Saturday morning for sure. And he's a big part of why they're here.
Yeah. Yeah, you could definitely see that was one of the only aspects of the game I would say that BYU won was sacking Baron Morton. And that was, you know, obviously a lot of it was hindered by his injury. Final question here for football. Do you believe that both these teams belong in the playoff regardless of Saturday's action? How do you feel about the College Football Playoff Committee, the Big 12? What's your opinion on that?
I think if either one of these teams was in a different league, and we know the two that what I'm talking about, it wouldn't even be a question. It's disgusting to me that they're both not shoe-ins. I mean, they are a combined 22-2. It's just the way it worked out. You wish that both teams, and this goes for both, had something else on their resume in the non-conference. You know, that's the one thing that you don't know what you don't know years prior when you're trying to schedule this stuff. And maybe you wish East Carolina was a bit better, Oregon State was a bit better, Stanford was a bit better. I mean, you know, there's just not a lot that you can lean on in the non-conference. But if you're going to be in a Power 4 league, and this is, and you're going to win 11 games and it's not good enough? Like, what are we doing? Like, so I don't know what your thoughts are, Chase, on expansion, but if this is what it needs to get teams like this in the Big 12, then expand it, yes. I don't know about the automatic bids and the different philosophies on it, larger AQ bids and all that stuff, but both of these teams absolutely should be in the CFP, and it shouldn't. The results Saturday morning shouldn't matter, factor into it whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree with you in a lot of ways. I think a game that is earned, necessarily you shouldn't be able to, and the committee has done this before, where they don't necessarily punish teams horribly for a game you earned the right to be in. And so, you know, we'll see what they do. But I have always been against expansion until the last couple of seasons. I am starting to
come get around a little bit more. I bet you're coming around.
Yeah. As you guys know, we here who produce this podcast are here at BYU. So obviously we're going to be a little bit, biased in how we think about this playoff. But, I think BYU and Texas Tech could both compete. With just about every single team. I mean, I think if BYU and Texas Tech get in the playoff, I think there's a pretty good chance they win a game or two. Conservatively, I feel like BYU could compete with a lot of the SEC. Texas Tech, I think, could compete with just about anybody. And so, I feel the same. But, yeah.
Yeah, and it's frustrating, too, when you're talking about a league that only plays 8 conference games, getting the bulk of the bids. It's not the same thing. And they play these non-conference games in November. Anyway, don't get me started. I'm going down a rabbit hole, but I believe that Texas Tech and BYU have absolutely earned the right to be in the CFP, regardless of what metric you want to point to. They check every box. And whether it's Notre Dame not being in a league or it's Texas, well, we only lost to Ohio State by 1 touchdown, and we outgained them and all that. Okay, what were your other non-conference games? And that was basically your 9th conference game if you want to look at Ohio State, and you lost it. So, I mean, I don't know. Don't get me started, but sorry.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Chase, keep hope alive, my man. Keep doing your thing. Appreciate you having me on, and go Cougs other than this Saturday.
The big stories, big man on campus.
Let's just give it to 3 winning quarterbacks. Texas Tech's Baron Morton had 310 yards passing and 3 TDs in the Red Raiders shutout against West Virginia. BYU quarterback Bear Bachmeyer was 21 of 25 for 289 yards and 1 TD in the Cougars' victory over UCF. And finally, TCU's Josh Hoover had 306 yards and 4 TDs in the Horned Frogs' 45-23 win over Cincinnati. Coming up on Thursday's episode of the pod, we feature Arizona soccer goalkeeper Olivia Ramey. She has a passion to help athletes work through mental health struggles and dreams of becoming a sports psychologist. The person behind that dream is her sister, who used to be a competitive swimmer. You'll hear from both of them in this Thursday's edition of the pod. Download and subscribe to the Big Stories podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Cleon Wall. The Big Stories pod will return soon. Big Stories is a production of BYU Radio.